B-Pod Studios.
Well, lengthy, but not lengthy enough, playoff series. So they lose to Toronto, but the exit interviews come out and everybody starts talking, including Brett Brown today. The man who covers him for the Inquirer on the Comcast Business Hotline is Keith Pompey. Keith, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Good. I thought Brett was really good today. Now, he talked a lot, and there were a couple things that could have gotten more specific. So let's talk about what you pressed him on, first of all, about his job. Do you believe that he knew his job wasn't in jeopardy, or do you think the owner was waiting to see how this finished?
I don't think he knew that his job was in jeopardy, no. I think he thought that his job was in jeopardy. Because the thing is, you know, Mike, he was asked after the game about his job, and he said, that's something that y'all need to talk to, you know, the team about. And then, to me, all the stuff that he was being said, you know, the report, the Mark Stein, you know, Mark Stein report was basically stuff that, you know, people have been talking about all year. It just happened to come on the day before that game. You would think that someone within the organization would have came out and made a public support for Brett Brown, a statement of public support, because it was the biggest game. And you have guys, and I know Brett says, oh, yeah, they could rally behind me. Nah, not if you're dead man walking. I mean, people, like, they're like, yo, they're about to fire the coach. Like, nobody's supporting them. What's going on? And I feel like that you know, could have had an impact on players, their players' performance, and it was a huge distraction. So, you know what I mean? If that was true, you know, Brett Brown probably would have said something beforehand, and the team would have said something beforehand. And it to me, it just looks like people are just trying to cover up things to make it seem like, you know, everyone else is crazy.
No, I agree with you, and we talked about this earlier. I think that you know, Josh Harris didn't decide until they got to Game 7 and that outcome, actually, where they lost on a miracle shot for him to commit, and that's what drove him to go into the concourse and high-five everybody. I believe he was waiting, and they needed to advance to a certain point before he was decided he was going to bring him back. So I agree with you. So did they make the right move in bringing him back?
I mean, at this point, I mean, you know, you're looking at coaches getting jobs, and you're saying to yourself, like, wow, like, people are hiring them. Who else is out there? You know, so I guess it's one of those things, like, who else is out there? I mean, J.J. Redick said that. You know, I do think that, you know, all of them, they're going to really be evaluated closely. You know, when you look at Brett Brown, people can complain about his late game adjustments. They can complain about a lot of other things. But he did coach his tail off in the second round series, playoff series. And also, the one thing that you can say is, like, hey, he did have three different teams. So now I think he's going to be really under the microscope to see what he can do, you know, with 82 games and a full in a postseason. You know, with the guys that they're going to assemble next year, you know, it's one of those things where it's a to be seen type of thing. But you know, it's hard for me to say a guy should lose his job after losing at the buzzer on Game 7 against the team that had the second best record in the league.
Yeah, I mean, that's the logical part of it. So, like, you know, we're talking about if they had lost a series in five games, you'd think the same result would have happened.
If they would have lost in five games, he would have been gone.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have been gone. And if they'd have lost to Brooklyn, you know, he might have been fired. Like, you know what I mean? Before they got back to Philly.
What was your opinion of what Brett had to say today on various players, the Embiid situation? He believes you know, he's going to come back and be in better shape, and Ben Simmons thing, which he really didn't answer directly on what that shot's going to be like. What was your impression of what he had to say about those two guys?
My impression was Brett Brown said what a coach is supposed to say in a public setting. You know, it's like one of those things where, you know, you go into a game or whatever, and you always say publicly, yeah, we're going to win. But then when you get behind closed doors, you say, we can't beat those Giants. We can't beat them. So to me, it just looked like a guy who was just basically out there publicly, you know, trying to take up for his players. That was it. You know, and the thing about Joel Embiid, you know, Brett Brown could say whatever he wants to say about Joel. You know, it's up to Joel to get back in better shape. And if you remember, Brett Brown kind of said the same thing about Markel last summer. Like, he hyped him up to the point where, you know, everyone was excited to see him at the start of the season. And he kept doing it throughout the summer. And then when we saw him, people were like, oh, what's going on? So to me, it's like the coach speak 101. He's being rah-rah for his guy so everyone can be excited.
Yeah, I get that. So now let's move on to Ben. It did seem like he was endorsing the fact that his brother's still going to work with him. So there may be a little discomfort there within the organization. Do you believe that to be true?
I mean, it could be, but, you know, here's the thing about that. You know, if you look at it, there's a lot of guys who do have their own workout guy, you know, with them. I mean, Ben's just happens to be his brother. I mean, Jimmy has a guy who works out with him and does things of that sort. So, you know, I think it's like part of the NBA, you know, and it was one of those things. They had a guy, John Townsend, used to work out Ben. They decided, you know, the family and the Sixers decided that they felt like his brother, you know, was better for him because it was a family member. So, you know, and the one thing I will say is that you do see his brother a lot on the road after shoot around, and they're in the gym getting up shots, you know, and sometimes even there at the gym before practice. So, you know, it's one of those things we'll see. But again, it's all up to Ben. You know, Ben has to, you know, dedicate himself to come out there and decide that he wants to become a better shooter.
Let's look now at how the team can look next year. And I don't know if you got any feel for, like, the exit interviews and everything like that, or what Elton Brand had to say, but what is your opinion on whether Jimmy and Tobias or both will be back and what they do with JJ, all this kind of thing?
You know, I honestly think that, I would be shocked if JJ comes back. I mean, you know, he could, but the Sixers, but the thing is, I think the Sixers are going to try to, you know, do the Tobias and Jimmy thing first. And the thing about JJ, I do believe when the clock strikes 12, the New York Knicks and maybe even the Brooklyn Nets are going to offer him. I mean, New York had people basically like the last two-thirds of the season at, like, every game, you know, and you factor if they get the first pick and they can get some big free agents who they think they got a chance at, J.J. Redick is a good guy who can come in and space the floor for them. You know, Jimmy and Tobias, I think what it's going to come down to, the Sixers, right, and I mean, they know that they can get paid with the Sixers, but I think it's going to come down to roles. I mean, because, you know, you have these two guys, you know, like, do you want to be the fourth option on this team, or do you want to go somewhere and get the money? You just don't get that fifth year, but you can be the man and you can get endorsements and you can do a lot of other things. So I think that's the situation that they have to go over, you know, amongst themselves and amongst their camp, so to speak.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Let me get back to Ben for 1 second, because you sat in that room, the interview with Ben, the exit interview with Ben, and when he was pressed on his shot, he just seems to be in denial about it. What do you make of that?
You know, Ben knows. He knows. But I think, you know, Ben is the type of guy that, you know, he's one of those dudes who, you know, you know how you look at a Western and the guy is out of bullets. And the guy, it's like five people in front of him, and he's talking about, go ahead, do what you got to do. Like, he's really nervous, but he's not going to admit it. And I think that's Ben. Ben knows that, you know, he needs to work on his Jay, but he's not going to come out and say it. Like, you know, in the press conference, he's going to come out like he's extremely confident. He's going to say, I got this and this and that. He's not going to let people know that, hey, you know, it was a failure this season. I mean, that's just Ben Simmons to me. He's a confident guy, you know, and he always wants to come across that way.
Well, let me ask you this. If the question, if there was a direct question to Ben that says, Ben, why is it that you don't shoot the ball? What would his answer be to that?
Because I don't need to.
Really?
But
the whole world knows he does. So if he knows, you're saying he, on one hand, he knows it, but he doesn't know it?
I mean, he knows. I mean, he knows it will make him a better player. You know, he knows that it will make him a better player. He knows that. You know, he knows that once he develops a jumper, it's going to be one of those things where, as much as we talk about Embiid, I find it hard to believe if Ben Simmons had a jumper that we wouldn't say that this wasn't Ben Simmons' team, especially with the health issues that Embiid has. But Ben Simmons, let's face it, you know, this guy has been a great athlete. You know, he's been a great basketball player. He's always been the best in the game or what have you. So it was always one of those things where he just used to do what he did and was better. He would blow by people. He would dunk on them. He would do all this other stuff. And as far as him saying, I don't need a jumper, it's one of those things where he looks around and he looks at his teammates. And you have, you know, J.J. Redick, you have Tobias Harris, you have Mike Scott, you know, guys who can stick threes, Joel Embiid. And to him, his role is to get them the ball and they make it. So that's why he would say, I don't need it. But deep down inside, he knows in order for him to get to this upper echelon, is the fact that, you know, like, I have to do that. Now, here's something else, Mike. Like, there were some people within the organization who, once Ben became an all-star, it was one of those things where they're saying, wow, we didn't want this to happen this year. Privately. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because, like, if you tell a guy, you say, okay, you can do everything besides shoot a jumper or take them, and you can say to him, like, if you start working on your jumper, then all of a sudden you're going to be an all-star. But now that he made it without getting the jumper, so what's the motivation? So now you have to say to him, like, yo, you could be a perennial all-star. You could be a first-team all-NBA type of guy. So it's one of those things where he's always been good enough to get by without a jumper. So, you know, he just has to fail.
All right, the last thing. Assistant coach has got to hire somebody, and the name Thibodeau came up the other day in my email. What do you think of that as a hire for a defensive coach? Would Brett submit himself to having a guy like Thibodeau as a strong-willed assistant?
I don't think I would.
You would not?
Nah, from Brett. Because, you know, because a lot of times this stuff goes wrong, and you got a guy like Tibbs who can step in and slide in and be the head coach.
He would be a threat more than a help.
Yeah, he would be a threat. He would be a threat. I mean, you know, everybody can say how confident they are, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would have Tom Thibodeau, especially knowing, even though, you know, some people can argue that, you know, Jimmy did him wrong for what he did in Minnesota. But, you know, he and Jimmy are still good friends, and they do have a conversation. So if it comes to a point, if you bring Jimmy Butler back and Tibbs is the assistant, and then you start seeing how Tibbs and Jimmy get along, this and that, he's listening to him more, nah, you don't want to bring that in here.
All right, the last question is this. Give me a name, give me a mid-level exception name that would help their bench.
A mid-level exception that would help their bench. Wow, this guy is going to want more than a mid-level, but I still think they could go after Tyreke Evans. You know, I know he didn't have a good season this past year in Indiana, but I think that they need a guy who can come off the bench and give them buckets, who can score. You know, I mean, I think that if you can get him for, like, you know what I mean, a year or 2 years, I think that he will help them out. Now, there are going to be some people who disagree, but when we look at it, the one thing that the the bench was kind of lacking was like perimeter scoring. I know that James Ennis stepped up a little bit, but if you had a guy who can just come in and help you, you know what I mean, who can get buckets, you know, I think that Tyreek Evans would be a good fit.
Not a bad name if they have the money. We'll see what happens. Keith, breathe easier these days. Yeah, that's over. You take a break. Good job.
Yeah. I'm gonna take a couple days off next week, bro.
Out of way. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Keith Pompey. Covering the Sixers now. Yeah, your beat writer, you go, oh, I get some time off. Just like you, man, with Sixers outside. You can hang out with Zaire. You know?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of
Mickey Williams.
If I went to the Sixers, would they give me Zaire's number?
Yo, Z, it's Tyrone.
You know who I am. You know, I'm your biggest.
I was just going to say, you're his biggest advocate.
You, me, and Nick, we got to have down.
Yeah, when's the Phillies next day off? Because I don't want to hang out with one and not the other. If I hang out, I should hang out with Zaire and Nick. That would be a great photo op, too, for Club Tyrone.
That would be a great day.
Club Tyrone, that'd be the poster for Club Tyrone.
Yeah, I'll get my lot of show up, too.
With you doing this pose.
That's my pose. It's a signature.
Wait, what'd you? Oh, yeah.
That's my signature Tyrone pose.
Yeah, it's so great.
Flanked by Nick Williams and Zaire Smith.
That's the pose. That would be awesome.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.